everyone who have made it to this session. The session is about where are we in achieving the UNGAS targets. First, before I can introduce the panelists, this is supposed to be a discussion, so you won't be seeing any PowerPoint presentations, anything fancy like that. It's supposed to be just a discussion. But just my experience with UNGAS, I participated in the UNGAS 2006 in the political declaration. Well, I thought it was promising in 2006. But the last one that I've just attended in 2008, for me, I felt it was a waste of time. And I'm trying to provoke the panelists to prove me wrong. If they think, no, I'm not optimistic on UNGAS, actually, we are achieving UNGAS promises. If we are, please convince me. Why should I participate in the next UNGAS process? Without wasting time, I'm going to introduce our panelists in the order in which they are going to speak. The first panelist is going to be Michelle Sidibe from the UNAIDS. Michelle is an Assistant General Secretary and a Deputy Executive Director of Programs in the UNAIDS. He's also, his career in global health and development started in more than 27 years ago. In his early professional life, he headed the international NGO in his home country in Mali, and that started from 1987 to 2001. He also represented UNICEF in several countries in Africa. He is also mostly passionate about HIV and in achieving most things, for example, like prevention of mother-to-child transmission of HIV. He also negotiated the price reduction of ARV drugs in Africa. So I'm going to do that before each presenter speaks so that I don't waste time. And each presenter has 7 minutes so that we can allow the audience to engage with presenters. And after Michelle has finished, I would allow questions, 2 questions or 3 questions, so that we can keep the discussion live and we don't lose what each presenter has presented on. Thank you. Over to you, Michelle.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Could you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. No? That is better. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Let me just start by saying that it's very important for us to remind each other that just 2 years ago, we made an extraordinary promise that we will scale up towards universal access for HIV prevention, treatment, care, and support. It is clear that we cannot lose the momentum, mainly now that we are seeing some results from our collective efforts. The progress report towards UNGAS targets reveal that 130 countries reviewed their national strategy, tried to identify obstacles towards universal access, define their roadmap. 105 countries set national targets on universal access, which resulted in more focus and accountable response. Like you heard also yesterday, we have a reduction in the new infection, reduction in the number of deaths, and the coverage of services are also increasing. We have 3 million people on treatment. PMTCT programs in just 2 years increased from 14% to 33%. Delay in sexual debut in young people. And also, we are seeing that people most at risk in places where we have a conducive policies and legislation are being more and more reached. By adopting the concept of universal access, the member states were saying in 2006, Madam Chair, because you were with us, that the current status quo is no longer acceptable. That there is no reason to have 2 million deaths per year from HIV/AIDS. That is not acceptable to have 2.7 million new infections every year. That is not acceptable to have 15 million orphans. Why they were saying that? They were saying that because the means exist today to make universal access both available and affordable to the people. However, the reality is that we are not being able to quicken the pace of action as requested by those member states. If we continue with the same rate of implementation like we are doing today, we will have by 2010 only 4.6 million people on treatment. Instead, 8.6 million people. We'll have a gap of almost 4 million people who will not be reached if we continue with the same pace of implementation. We'll have only 21 million positive pregnant women who will be reached with measures to protect their child instead of reaching 78 million women who will be in need of those services. We will have only 24 million people who will be tested instead of 61 million people who will be in need. Each of us, Member of Parliament, implementers, private citizens, must now work to ensure that we move towards universal access, to make sure that the resources which are out there could work to produce results. We need to build an appropriate partnership between governments, civil society, private sector, all the constituency to help to deliver on universal access. Because if we fail to do that one, I'm convinced that we'll not be able to deliver on 2015 Millennium Development Goals. Again, I want to say that the timing is there, the resources are coming, the capacity are being built, the demand for making a difference is seen everywhere where we are working. It's time for us to deliver. It's time for us for universal access. Let us make it a reality. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. But I would like to pose a question to you. If you are saying that 2.7 million people will get infected with HIV, and 4 million people will not access to treatment, then why should we invest in UNGAS? Because why should we invest in the UNGAS process? Do you think it's helping? Should we continue investing in UNGAS? Are the promises that are made in UNGAS, do you think they make sense?
I personally feel that it will be a crime to not just hold the member state accountable. UNGAS is a forum for taking a decision, but is also a space for creating public accountability. Up to us to really foster this public dialogue in all the different settings to make sure that those goals are reached by 2010. So NGAS for me is the best framework we could have, and we should use it to really foster public accountability.
Thank you. Any questions? I have one there. Two. Okay, that's all for Michelle. Do we have the mics? There's a mic there, the person who has raised the hand. Can you also move towards the mic? And Michelle, if it's possible, if you can note the questions so that we don't take too much time for Kieran.
Yes.
And I would like to ask, people who are going to ask questions, to be very brief and ask only one question, not three.
My question is directed at Michelle. You have talked of women. You have also talked of pregnant women. You have talked of all the other groups. But I didn't hear you address the disability group, which constitutes 10% of the world population. If you could possibly address that. Thank you.
Thank you. I am Angelique from Rwanda and a student in Boston. I have a question on the goals, because the UN GAS goals define strategies to allocate resources, even to define needs in terms of resources. As we are talking in this conference, I feel a little bit confused on what is universal. I know that the goals were setting a certain coverage of services, let's say, for certain services, universal was 80%. But the move in this conference is like making every single person in need reached. So what is universal access, and what are those goals set? Are they changing now with the current trend? And because that determines automatically how much money countries should plan to get in ideal situation. Thank you.
Thanks. Michelle, just note them. You will come back, because
yes.
I don't want to take
Thank
time
you very
from
much.
Okay. The next speaker is Kieran Daly. He is the Director of Policy and Communication at ICASO. He has academic background in development and economics. After working in West Africa for government and trade unions, Kieran has worked for the last decade in the international and national aids policy, with a focus on advocating and directly supporting community sector involvement in aids policy, also coordinating and governance. Over the past 10 years, he has been involved in the UNAIDS and the Global Fund boards and UNGAS. Most recently was the co-chair of the PGA's Civil Society Task Force for the high-level meeting in June. Kieran is also involved in ICASO and supporting national and regional communities in evaluating processes in DOCs and African Union implementation, and was the lead in developing guidelines for community sector involvement in the national AIDS coordination. So Kieran, we've heard from Michelle that it's possible to reach the targets set by UNGAS. Do you think that's true from the civil society perspective? Are we going to be able to reach the targets? Is the process really helpful from civil society's perspective?
Can I be heard? Yeah. I think that the short answers are, I don't think we're there, and is the process helpful? I think it probably is as a mechanism for accountability. And maybe I'll extend on that, but I think they're my essential answers to it. I think in terms of just what I will say will be based on the last sort of 8 years of work that ICASO has been supporting in terms of community research and evaluations in relation to the UNGAS commitments and implementation. And there are more recent reports, my colleague said in the back of the room, in terms of what that means to communities, and I'll just touch on a few things. But I think one of the related things is there has been greater civil society involvement in monitoring the UNGAS commitments and their implementation, and that has improved. But the big question is it enough? So I will run through three quick areas. One is around the community perspectives and feedback from their evaluations, with the main emphasis there on the lack of and the failure to maintain human rights protections within the sort of framework of how governments are delivering on the UNGAS commitments. The second is around that level of community sector involvement and the impact it has, partly to try and answer these questions. And lastly, really around the need for a new accountability mechanism, as it stands, not really working in the way that I think community needs it to. But in terms of the reviews by the community sector, as I said, there have been lots of different reviews, including the ones that we've supported. In fact, Rico was involved in the ones for Indonesia. But as I mentioned, human rights and legal protections are still failing to be addressed. And we're seeing in the UNGAS reports that come out from the countries the lack of reporting on indicators around legislation and policy that would create an environment in which human rights could be protected. And this is maybe the most fundamental issue that comes out of the failures to date. And communities have consistently reported this lack of attention, particularly for key populations. And the key populations we talk about are particularly sex workers, men who have sex with men, people who use drugs, etc. And the key thing here is the reporting by governments is that they're not reporting on some of the data here. And even, for example, I think China was one in which we reviewed, and they have a 45-page report for the UNGAS, the most recent one. They have three lines of mainly quantitative data related to needle distribution, but nothing on access. And we see the figures from the International Harm Reduction Association estimating only about 7% of people who use drugs have access to needle distribution. So, you know, there are these gaps in the data of the reporting that we really need to address. The other one, and we've heard it a number of times in the conference and even the opening, men who have sex with men in Africa, you know, are largely absent from the reports. Yet, you know, an example is Senegal, with a very reasonably low prevalence rate of, I think, 0.7%. But amongst the population of men who have sex with men, it's 21%. Yet they're not showing up in these reports. And it's really a critical need, if we're going to use the UNGAS process and the reporting process to actually allow us to understand where we are, we need to disaggregate this data. You know, because UNAIDS reported recently in their global epidemic update or report, you know, the increase of prevention services available for some of these key populations. But we don't really know whether the right people are getting it. Yes, increase in number of services, but is it going to the right people? And critical to this, and that's what we're getting back from the community reviews of UNGAS reports, is the continued criminalization of these key populations and, you know, and the resulting inequity of access for them. The other related thing is the consequent lack of knowledge of the epidemic. And UNAIDS are very, you know, prominent in saying, you know your epidemic, particularly in terms of prevention. But we're not getting that knowledge. It doesn't seem to be available, both in terms of what data is available, but also the way in which the countries are implementing their programs. And this was actually seen in the target-setting process that was done in 2006 or 7? 2006. Where, you know, they became both unambitious and the question from the floor about what do we mean by universal access. Many of the countries don't seem to see it as every person in need should be reached. And that's what universal access means. And that sort of relates to lack of knowledge of what your epidemic is, and not really looking at pushing the services to those in need. I'm going to skip because I'm aware that you want a conversation. So I think just in terms of the key points around the community sector involvement in the reporting process, we did see through the reporting and the reviews by communities that where they were involved, you had better data and you had better reporting. But this involvement is still pretty tokenistic. And I can give examples later if that's helpful. But I just wanted to end, and I think, on this new accountability mechanism that I referred to. And as co-chair of the Civil Society Task Force for the high-level meeting, which was largely looking at how we ensure civil society involved in that June meeting in New York, yes, we had, I think, pretty good involvement, and we had some great representation of some of these key populations we're talking about. But if you look at what happened there, it was yet again another way in which governments came to the UN, did a series of presentations, no real dialogue around whether what they were saying was true, whether their reports were actually reflecting their epidemic. So we have another talking shop, another series of speeches. And what I think in answer to the question of whether is this UNGAS framework helpful, yes, it is if we then have some better accountability of their reporting on implementation. And I would like us to have some discussion about what that accountability mechanism can be, and maybe learning from the Human Rights Council way in which they bring different countries, and then there's a real dialogue on questions from NGOs, but questions from other governments. So I think I would like to see that, and then maybe we actually could have a better accountability in 2011 when we look to see whether they're meeting and reaching universal access by 2010.
I'm also posing another question. Naming and shaming is not the language for the UN, and especially in UNGAS. Don't you think that is letting government get away with murder? If we're not going to name China as China, you know, not respecting human rights, South Africa in the case, if it's the South African government which is not doing the same, don't you think that on its own is encouraging poor reporting on key issues which are related to the targets? But that's a question you can answer later.
Right.
I'm taking questions. Two, okay. I'm taking two for now. We will have more discussion. I just want to allow all the presenters to at least give you a preview. I have one here, one at the back. Three, four. Can you come closer to the mics? Kiran, you do the same, you just note them, and then we will have further discussions.
Kiran, given your comments on China, and with the Olympic Games opening in a few days, should we not use this conference as an opportunity to put pressure on the Chinese government around its abuse of human rights, around on HIV, and its imprisonment of AIDS activists?
Karen. I'll introduce. I'm Arvind Pandey from National Institute of Medical Statistics, Indian Council of Medical Research, New Delhi, India. I have a basic question to Karen and earlier speaker as well. Should we say that UNGAS evaluation and estimation is more for the generalized epidemic, less applicable or less strategic for the concentrated or low epidemic, particularly in view of, as you mentioned, the coverage, poor coverage? I must say that there is a gap between the governance and socio-cultural milieu of the population. Maybe stigma is very high. This is a hidden population. And we know that only one-fifth of the population is tested among those who are positive. If we have this knowledge, how far our UNGAS estimate and strategic planning could be said to be recommended for the right kind of program implementation?
Thank you. Can we keep our comments very, very short?
Thank you. My name is Bonfis Kalanda. I'm from Malawi, UNFPA. I don't have a question, but I've got a comment. In this conference, I'm presenting a poster. The title is Implementation of Regional and International HIV and AIDS conventions and declarations. The study was done in Malawi, Mozambique, and Lesotho. My comment is that my findings are that there is normally no independent evaluations of conventions and declarations. The Yungas is better, but it's not an evaluation at all. It is reporting on the Yungas. So in general, there are no independent evaluations. So I'd like to recommend that we should be doing independent evaluations of conventions and declarations. Secondly, and lastly, when you look at all the conventions and declarations, they are made up sort of at the international level, but there's no guidance to governments to say what is it that you need in terms of resources, in terms of institutional frameworks, in terms of anything you need to achieve them. They're made up in the air. There is no guidance on how to achieve what is set in the international conventions and declarations. Thank you.
Thanks. The last one.
From Malawi. For me, I want to focus on the accountability. And I'm saying access for all. For me, it means that child in the village, in the rural village in Malawi, being able to go to the health center and accessing treatment. But unfortunately, our qualified staff are all trekking to the developed countries, where they are working there as medical staff and leaving our communities with no nurses, nothing. So as much as we talk about monitoring, I think we are also looking at people at all levels being able to access this. How do we start moving towards that direction? Because there have been a talk about human resource, but I don't think we are yet there because the nurses and they are all trekking to the west.
Thank you. I'm hoping that Kiran, you got all the questions. Then our third panelist is Dr. Mepu Ramatlapeng. She's the Minister of Health and Social Welfare in Lesotho. She was appointed member of the Senate after 2007 general elections. Until 1984, Dr. Ramatlapeng served as a medical doctor for the Ministry of Health and Social Welfare. Prior to this, she practiced in a private practice. Between 2005 and 2007, she was involved in a number of projects within the Clinton Foundation. She is also a member of several organizations and served on the board of directors of CAMAS, which is an advisory body to the AU. She also holds a medical degree from Kalkhof Medical Institution and proceeded to John Hopkins School of Hygiene and Public Health and Wilma. My question to Dr. Ramatlapeng, from the perspective of Lesotho, do you think the UNGAS promises and targets are feasible for Lesotho? Or do you think, or what do you think are the obstacles in achieving the UNGAS targets for your country?
Thank you, Chairperson. I certainly feel that the UNGAS targets are achievable, but this is based on whether everything is in place to be able to deliver. You earlier asked me why it is that Lesotho is not on the same platform with South Africa, with Botswana, and why Lesotho has not reached the same level of delivery that Botswana has reached. I don't think we have ever been under any illusion that we will be able to reach these targets unassisted. I think African governments have made it very clear that HIV/AIDS delivery of care and treatment will not be achieved from your normal budgetary lines. We need some assistance to be able to reach these very impressive targets. Personally, I like targets. I like the fact that we are working towards a particular target. We had 3x5. Clearly, we were not able to reach it at the time when we expected to, but majority of countries did reach it, whether it was 2 years, 3 years after they set target. The question is, people remain focused. We are focused on a particular target that we hopefully will be able to reach by 2010, 2011. To give you a preamble, Lesotho would not have even rolled out ARVs in the public sector if it were not because of the actions of a few people. Some of them are on this table. Mr. Stephen Lewis played a major role in making sure that a few African countries that he assisted were able to attract assistance from the developed countries, and he became a very good spokesperson and ambassador for HIV and AIDS, and was able to, for instance, in Lesotho, assist us to roll out ARVs in the public sector, working closely with the Ontario group of doctors. That was the first group, and then with Clinton Foundation, and then Partners in Health. We are we are very proud that 3 years down the line, it's not even a complete 3 years. I'll give you a few examples. A number of pregnant women receiving a full course of ARVs or PMTCT. For PMTCT, the set target is 80%, but last year we reached 31%. And percentage of population tested for HIV/AIDS is 80%, the target that we expect to reach, but we were able to reach 25%. Talking about this, Lesotho set out to test every single adult and children over the age of 12 years in what we called the Know Your Status campaign. I know we set very impressive targets that in 3 years we would have tested every person. But that initiative largely went unfunded. But even with the 25%, the Know Your Status campaign has remained a very strong brand. Every person, the stigma is almost not present in Lesotho. Every person is able to access care and treatment. Of the 156 healthcare centers, we are offering ARVs in 122 to date. And we are offering them at primary healthcare level. It is a largely nurse-driven model. All the hospitals clearly are also receiving ARVs. We are mindful of the question that was asked earlier by a person from Malawi about the universal access. Mindful of that, the government of Lesotho removed all user fees at primary healthcare level. And that means every single person can now access care and treatment of any kind from the primary healthcare center, and harmonized user fees in all hospitals that belong to the Christian Health Association of Lesotho and the government of Lesotho. So in this manner, this was also working towards that. From this year, we are also paying 4,500 community health workers who are our soldiers, our foot soldiers, who have been working since 1976. These are the people who are able to identify sick people. These are the people who are able to refer people for care and treatment. And also, these are the people who have told us that because Lesotho has got such a difficult terrain, it is probably easier not to use horses, because that's what we use, but buy motorcycles. Now, hopefully all of them will be able to use motorcycles to be able to communicate with the villages and the primary healthcare centers. We therefore feel that the UNGAS targets, while they are very ambitious, we are going to be able to reach them. Another issue is the issue of partners. I don't think people should shy away from Lesotho now that South Africa is free. I think people should continue seeing Lesotho in the same light as a liberation country and assist Lesotho. The fact that Melinda Gates Foundation was able to assist Botswana in a manner that they did. Botswana has reached all the universal targets to date in a very, very short time. And that is concerted effort from both the government of Botswana, the political will, and the donors. We are not in short supply of the political will. Lesotho is doing very well on the political will side. Lesotho has got the Archbishop testing very openly in front of everybody. The Prime Minister has tested openly. Almost everybody of good standing in Lesotho has been able to demonstrate that this thing is not a scourge. You can live beyond that. Also, we have rolled out a DNA PCR because we realized that our young children are dying very, very soon. Between the ages 0 and 18 months, we were losing more than 50% of the children. So we have rolled out DNA PCR, and shortly I actually will be addressing the public on it. We therefore feel that because we have embraced every available measure to make sure that we move forward, we are on track. I think we will be able to achieve them. Thank you.
I'll reserve my questions for you for later. For me, I'm encouraged to see Health Minister being positive and saying we will reach targets and we are determined to reach targets. Well, I'm taking a lesson. Questions, please. I didn't say where I am from. Okay, can you go closer to the mic? I have another question there. Okay, two questions. Yeah, start.
Okay. Notes. Munongos Kumal, Chairperson of the Treatment Action Campaign in South Africa. Thank you very much to the three presenters so far for good update. Sorry, Chairperson, I'll ask three questions and I'll be very short. Dr. Ramatlapeng, like Wisaka said, it's very encouraging to see a Minister of Health being very excitable about Millennium Development Goals and the progress made in your particular country. I come from a very different country, South Africa, and I can promise you the report that you have on how far we're meeting our targets is a report that doesn't really begin to show the extent of the problem and how less we are responding. And I think the ineffectiveness of our monitoring processes in ensuring that we meet the development goals. So my question is, Dr. Ramatlapeng, what is it that we're missing in the African region? Specifically in meeting the development goals, that at this point in time we're still reporting reaching 27% of people that have to test, when we set our targets for 80%, what are the resources that are there that we're not using? Because I don't think everything that we need to meet the development goals rests on financial resources. So in your own opinion as the Minister of Health in an African region, what do you think is missing? And I'll tell you what my views are, but I'm not going to tell you now. Michelle, one more minute. Michelle, I want to understand, when would we get to a point where Ungas has the balls, as they would say, to face up to the challenge and face the reality that we're actually not doing enough as countries and as people who run these processes, to come back and say we're not doing it and we're not doing it enough. So when are we expecting to see that before 2010?
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Spiwe Hlophe from Swaziland. I would like to have some questions towards my Honourable Minister in Lesotho. I'm very much happy the way she has presented herself on the issues of achievements of the goal and the ambition she has that she hopes they'll achieve the goals. And then I have one question. She talked about the political commitment. How far have they gone towards reaching the 15% allocation on the Abuja Declaration? That is my question. And the resources allocated towards the HIV and AIDS programs in her country? And then my second question is on the issue of monitoring for those that are on ARV. How are their monitoring systems in place? And then how are they tracing their defaulters? And what is the package within the monitoring so that she can say, yes, we have achieved our goals? Thank you.
Thank you. Minister Ramatlapeng, you just note the questions, and then after we have done all presentations. Then my next panelist is Rico Gustav. He started to work in the NGO sector in 1999, initially on issues around drug addiction. And then he moved in the area of AIDS when he realized that Indonesia was entering a phase of HIV epidemic. From 1999 to 2003, he worked in various community organizations and faith-based organizations in Indonesia. In 2004 to 2007, he worked in the UNAIDS country office in Indonesia in community unit as a liaison and partnership assistant.
He conducted several qualitative studies on access to ARVs in Indonesia and promoting greater involvement of people living with HIV. Since 2005, he also started community monitoring in Indonesia, especially in monitoring country progress towards UNGAS targets. And in 2007, he participated in Gesto's project in monitoring sexual and reproductive health and rights. And currently, he has been involved in the community fellow to Commission on AIDS in Asia report based in Bangkok, Thailand. My question for you, Rico, do you think the UN meetings have paid enough attention to the challenges of the most affected countries, for example, Asia, Africa, Latin America? Do you think the UNGAS process has actually paid attention to the high burden countries?
Okay. I think, I personally think that, I will give you an example. Right now there are discussions in Asia regarding the terms generalized and concentrated epidemic. Because we, in Asia, some of us feels that it is not properly used in Asia terms. You can actually read the Commission on AIDS in Asia's report on that. But this hasn't been reflected in the UNGAS. So what I think is UNGAS should accommodate these differences between these regions, because every region have different characteristic of epidemic, have different characteristic of populations and subpopulation and things like that. So in terms of that, I think UNGAS should also accommodate that. And also, I would like to add some points on how UNGAS should link, UNGAS on HIV should link with other commitments also. I think it's very important for us to recognize the UNGAS on drugs, because right now, the UNGAS on drugs and UNGAS on HIV is like separately moving. However, these two issues is very close, and I think it's really important for us, for UNGAS, to also accommodate this in the documents also.
Okay.
And I would like to also speak. I would like to comment on UNGAS progress in my country. Actually, repeating what Kiran is saying, that. Yes, I will tell you what's happening in Indonesia. Yes, since UNGAS, there are some progress in Indonesia. Since UNGAS, we actually providing free ARVs for PLHIV. What they didn't mention in the UNGAS report, UNGAS country report, is that this free access to ARVs, for the last 4 years, there are some major issues with the change supply management. And what happened is that every 3 months or every 4 months, some PLHIV have to stop their ARV treatment. And this is a major issue, and it's not reflected in the UNGAS reports. So I agree, and you can see it in this ICASA's report, because I've been involved in it, and it's reflected there. So I do agree that UNGAS should accommodate more qualitative indicators, or somehow to show this qualitative aspect of the picture, because if we don't show that aspect, then it's totally useless. Yes, the service coverage is scaling up, but still the quality. How about the quality? In other sessions, I was also mentioning about how VCT services in Indonesia scaled up, have major scale up for the last 2 years. But also at the same times, when we did some qualitative study, we also found that the quality of the service is not that good. We actually found a group of VCT counselors who are actually, beside doing counseling, she also offering the client for multi-level marketing and things like that. So, and this drive the clients off. And there are some questions about the quality of services. I think UNGAS should ask more about this kind of issues, and along with the quantitative issues. Thank you.
Thanks, Rico.
I'm going to take questions. One. Only one.
Yes? Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that UNGOS is mainly important because it helps us to keep our government accountable at the national level. And it is also very important because it highlights the fact that the national response is not only a government response, it is also a civil society response. For the last review meeting, we from civil society had high expectations about the number of information we send to UNAIDS regarding the national realities in our countries. So groups like ICASO, IAKIT in Indonesia, Justice in Brazil, Youth Coalition. So we had a strong, we did a strong work providing information to UNAIDS and in the line that that Rico was coming in terms of providing information with qualitative data that could be aggregated to quantitative information that UNAIDS used to use when are doing their reports. But in the recent launched AIDS global report, we didn't find any information that we provided. So what is the meaning of civil society to provide information to UNAIDS if this information is not used when UNAIDS release their documents? This is one question to Michelle. And the second question is about, we went to UNGOS and the last review meeting, and when we left UNGOS, it was supposed that in 2 weeks we'll have the summary from the President of Assembly, and it was a very negotiated process, not having another declaration or commitment. The summary is not read yet, so perhaps what happened? Because I didn't see the summary yet. And the last question is about the process. We know that UNGOS is not like a convention that governments are obliged to fill. So we saw that no goal were achieved up to now, and we know, and you need to talk about that, that no goal will be achieved until 2010. So, and now, what's going on? And just to finish, I think that the question that Kirian is bringing, that some of us are trying to raise in all meetings we are, is the question of accountability. And we need this mechanism that could be not only to civil society participate, but also to see how could be possible to have a much stronger bodies, international bodies, to point the fingers to the governments in a clear way. Because, you know, I'm from Brazil. In Brazil, UNAIDS have a very good relationship with the government because the governments are performing well. But UNAIDS cannot say anything in countries when they are not performing. So how could we change in this moment that UNAIDS is also revising your format and going through, and UN in general are revising the way they are going to work? So to me, those
thank
are
you.
The important
thank
questions.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was a very long comment, and I'm hoping that you have noted. The last speaker, and please be patient. For those who have asked questions, there will be time to engage with your questions, and I'm actually trying to reserve some time towards the end of the discussion so that we can have an interactive discussion and anyone can ask any question. So the last speaker, Maria Angela, she is a pediatrician and a hygienist. She is mastering in maternal and infantile health for the Institute of Health of Child Health of the University of London, currently known as the University College. She acts in the field of public health since 1983.
initially as a pediatrician in basic units of health and later as a director of the Department of Health Attendance of Kiritiba. Is that correct? Of the Department of Surveillance and Research of the State General Office of the Health. There are so many of in your bio, sorry, in Brazil. And of the Information Center and Planning of Health of Curitiba. She acted in the Brazilian STD and AIDS program as a health head of the External Cooperation Unit from January 2004 to 2005, November. And since then, she is a director. My question to you, Maria Angela, we've heard from some of the countries that are not doing not so good in achieving the targets, but we have heard that Brazil is doing good. So is that true? Because we've heard that you're doing some good work in Brazil, because we don't want to live here depressed.
That's why you left me for last.
Yes.
Can you pronounce your name? Because you pronounce my name very well.
Oh, Huiseca.
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 Huiseca. It's difficult, but... actually, Huiseca, I think in Brazil we did have some progress. You know, we still have major challenges, and I'm going to speak about it a bit. But I'm going to take the opportunity of being last and try to respond to some of the issues that were raised here. And the first issue that was raised was your comment that it was very, that the 2008 UNGAS left much to desire, you know, and what is it useful or not. And actually, I think Kieran responded that when he said about the commitments and the accountability. But I'd like to say, Michelle, you know, on these international agreements, we end up with too many words, you know. And we end up on going round words and around words, and sometimes the targets or the goals are not easy to understand. And I'd like to make a call for simpler targets, you know, because the simpler the targets, the better and the more accountable, the easier to be accountable. And that's for all of us who work on as activists, where we are always trying to put our, you know, our view and our agenda on these commitments, and then they end up endless. And we sometimes lose focus. You know, just a provocation. And also when Kieran said, know your epidemic, and then I'm going to draw on the Brazilian response to talk about that when you're saying why Brazil is doing good or has some successes. When Kieran said that know your epidemic should drive the response, actually, it's not enough to know the epidemic, you know. Because whether you call key population, most at risk groups, vulnerable groups, we've been seeing, I'm here since the beginning of last week in different meetings, and from Michelle, from the perspective of 2006 on gas, there are several issues that are so-called cultural when you talk about key population or vulnerable groups. And, for example, in 2006, we had a lady, you know, from a Muslim country who was defending that we shouldn't have written down commercial sexual exploitation. She wanted, the Muslim countries wanted us to only mention sexual exploitation. That means that the sexual exploitation is all right as long as it's not commercial. Or this year I went to the World Health Assembly and I was sitting beside another country where a lady came up and defended female circumcision. No. So what I'm trying to say is that it's not only governments that have to move towards an agenda defending human rights. Societies have to move as well. You know, and we cannot agree, you know, that because these issues have a very strong cultural background, that they are right, you know, because it's a human right violation anywhere. know, when you're talking about sexual orientation or laws that criminalize gay men or sex workers, we are talking about human rights violation. It's not acceptable anymore to say that that's cultural. You know? And I heard that in the past few days. And in Brazil, I'd like to say that one of the reasons we've been moving forward with the prevention agenda is because we name the populations and we work with them. And sex work in Brazil is not criminalized. It has a lot of stigma and discrimination. But the government and many civil society organizations are working towards bringing visibility, positive visibility to sex workers. The same thing with homophobia. It's going to be a crime in Brazil. So it has to move. What I'm saying, that's not only governments that are accountable, but societies are accountable as well. So we all need to be more proactive towards these human rights violations if we don't, because these human rights violations jeopardize access, you know, to prevention, to treatment, and to everything. And finally, when you talk about access to treatment, Brazil is a country that has free universal access. I think our colleague here asked, it was a very good question, what's universal access? When we're talking about universal access, we're talking about free universal access. And is it achievable or not? And we proved in Brazil it's a developing country with many inequalities, you know, many problems, health problems included. And we are managing to have a sustainable response. And I think we do have two major challenges for the future. You know. Like we've been hearing, and Michel knows it, I'm sure Kieran as well, there's a lot of talk internationally on should we focus money on disease-oriented approaches, you know, or should we work with strengthening health systems? And there's a lot of discussion, and this is a very strategic issue right now, because when you're saying increase in access, because we have already 3 million people in treatment, but it's only 30%. But to increase access, we do have to have points of delivery in health services. Now, this is not such a big problem in Latin America and the Caribbean, but it's a big problem in Africa. What's a big problem in our region is access to good medicine, good quality, at lower prices. Now, it's unacceptable now that some countries in Latin America have there's a huge gap in what we pay for second-line drugs in Brazil, which is much more competitive. And some other countries like Mexico pay, and the Mexican government is taking some strong measures regarding that. So I think we do have these two big challenges regarding achieving universal access by 2010. We have to bring together people who work towards strengthening health systems and the people who work fighting AIDS. And we have to lower down prices and increase the availability of cheaper, generic, pre-qualified drugs. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Questions? There's one here. Okay. After that question, I'm going to start with you, Michelle, if you can respond. And the floor is open for discussion after each presenter has responded. And I'm hoping you can maybe some kind work towards your conclusion, because we're getting closer to the time to close.
The question I want to ask to Maria Angela, as Vuyiseka has asked before, that you achieved or you did so well in Brazil. My question would be, you spoke about challenges or obstacles that you came across. My question would be, what are those challenges and how did you manage to overcome them in order for you to achieve what you've achieved today? Thank you.
All right. Over to you, Michelle.
Thank you very much, Madam. Hello? Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I am having a trouble because a series of questions here. but I will start with the disability one. I was just lucky to be in the press conference on the disability, so I am happy to have this question. Winston Zulu, who was one of the panelists there, was sharing with a lot of emotion the fact that he was an activist for almost 20 years, traveling all over the world, talking about how much it's difficult to be HIV positive and to live also with TB. But during these 20 years of activism, no one asked him about his disability. He was not even able to come to this podium because nothing was planned to make those people who could not come like us to just jump those stairs to reach this podium. So I personally feel that we have been completely missing that 10% of the total population in the world today are living with some kind of disability, and that we have no program focus for them, no strategic information or really mobilized to make sure that they could be, we could understand what is happening in between disability and HIV infection, and no research, systematic research is going on. So I personally feel that Mexico probably is giving us opportunity to also explore these areas. The second question is about global report. Thank you very much for raising this question. I think our colleague from Brazil, I'm very happy. Because it's the first time, to be honest with you, that we have a real, I can say, comprehensive report which was able to include not just the data coming from the government, but the data collected from civil society, data coming from household survey, from foundation, from even scientific research group. We managed even for the first time to have 700 individual focal points, maybe you were one of them, selected from different parts of the world to give us their qualitative feedback on the report which were proposed to us. Of course, it's very difficult for us when we are receiving 130 reports coming from different groups to reflect all the information. But if you are going to the report, you will find tables where we are trying to take into account what you are trying to say by classifying countries in function of where they are, by saying that those 20 countries managed to just achieve 25% of their target set since 2006. Those countries moved towards the order. So I think your question is pertinent. We need to improve that. We need to work more closely to make sure that the report will already integrate. Your summary report from the high levels, I'm also frustrated. But, you know, it's like Mariangela was saying, our jargon and others. But it's a member state jargon. You know, is unfortunately, sorry, you were there when we were negotiating this declaration. We were there until 2 a.m., 4 a.m., the last day, and we were not even sure that we could have a declaration because we are just fighting if we have to put towards universal access or as close as possible to universal access. So let us be realistic. That is certainly also part of the whole member state and diplomatic wording debate. But we just received the report from the President of the General Assembly, and it will be shared with you because it's a process which is managed by the General Assembly President. So it is a summary report of the President of the General Assembly. The goal setting, you raised a pertinent question. Many of you have been already addressing that. It was a serious debate when I was leading this all universal access process in more than 130 countries, 7 regions. The debate was around, we are talking about global coverage, global access. What means really universal access? Let us not make it complicated. I was just saying that we will have, if we continue with the same rate of implementation, only 4.6 million people on treatment in 2010. And the people in need of treatment will be around 8.6 million people. What we are talking about, how we'll reach those 4.6 more people, million people who are in need of treatment. Let us, and each country has been able, 3 minutes more, thank you. So not just more. I finish. And yes, and I will not come back. So I think it's important. But it's important to also mention that each country set their own target, which is very important to hold countries accountable. In Namibia was only, we're having 1% in 2003 coverage in treatment. Today we're talking about 88%, which is a big increase, but still needed to continue to maintain that end to. And we had our minister from right now telling us in Lesotho we'll manage to have it. But what is the most important is also the Round 8 Global Fund just came out, 6.4 billion requests from the countries. And is due to what? Is due to the fact that we have been supporting with civil society groups, countries to reinforce their capacity to come out with more demand for resources in order to scale up their program towards universal access. 6.4 billion requests is doubling what was requested for the round 7. And it's important because during this whole process with civil society, we managed to set a target for making sure that the success rate, which is just 40% for Global Fund countries who are accessing to Global Fund money for AIDS, to say, let us go to 70%, which is the type of process which helps to create inclusiveness and other things. Accountability, we all agree, that's what I said. Let us foster public accountability. I personally feel that we need continental review, we need regional, sub-regional review with SADC, with others. We were just in Lisbon last week where we had a review coming from Lusophone countries trying to see where they are and how they can improve, how we can have South-South cooperation to make that happening. We need also certainly to have independent bodies with a clear mechanism which can help us to come out with a better assessment of where we are. I will stop there, but I think those are a few elements I just wanted to touch upon.
Okay, thank you. Now you have 3 minutes, strictly 3 minutes to respond. Kieran.
Okay. I will be very brief. The first point I just want to really touch on the obvious question, which I think was more of a statement around China and whether we should use this as an opportunity to challenge the Chinese government around the detention of AIDS activists, etc. You know, I've actually lived in North America for long enough to be able to say it's a no-brainer. But I think, obviously, I think some of us are cynical about conferences, but without doubt it's a place where we really need to raise some of these issues that we can't do at the country level. And I think it is a call for us to do something, China being one country, but many others as well. One of the lucky things is the number of questions that came to me actually were answering the questions as they all came together. So I think your question about, you know, naming and shaming, is this the answer? The question about, or the statement around needing independent evaluations, the example of South Africa from the chair of TAC about their report not reflecting the reality of the challenges, the comments around the need for qualitative data and information. I think all of these are statements and reasons why we need the shadow reports from civil society. And I think it's an interesting one that there was a push, and in fact my own organization did push to try and get civil society involved in the official processes rather than investing too much time on shadow reporting. But Alessandra mentioned, and there were some shadow reports that were really critical to highlighting the differences between official reporting and unofficial reporting. So in part conclusion, I think it's essential that we continue to support the shadow reporting alongside the official reporting as another element of checking whether we're delivering on the targets. My last note, very quick. one point. I very, very rarely publicly disagree with Mariangela, but I think the idea of having simpler targets or even simpler indicators and the complexity of it, I think in part we actually need to get that complexity because of the points around needed disaggregated data and the existing reporting and the existing indicators don't necessarily give us the information we need to know whether the services are going to the right people. And lastly, my main point is, through all of this, I think it's become very clear that we do need to improve, as Alessandra said, the accountability mechanisms. And we're not doing it in this discussion, but I think it's a call to everyone to start that discussion about how we make it better. Because the President's summary was not meant to be a negotiated text. So to not have been done within the 2 weeks that was promised is concerning, because it highlights again maybe the lack of accountability. And somebody somewhere, some government is obviously not happy with the text that none of us have seen. So it does highlight the need for a new mechanism. That was probably more than
thank you. Right on time.
I want just to add one thing. Just one. You know, it's very important because if you look at this shadow report or whatever you call that, I will not call it shadow report, but a report made by civil society. Just today, I think Ampar launched a report which was clearly demonstrating that amongst 128 countries were reporting to us, 90% of those countries didn't report on MSN. So those are the type of parallel reports which are very useful for us to really create pressure on the member state to try to look at also which type of question we need to raise to address those vulnerable or sensitive issues.
Thank you. I won't allow you again.
Yes. The mic is not on.
I think it's on.
Okay. Thank you. I will start with the question from the lady from South Africa, from Treatment Action Campaign. She wanted to know why our reach is so low, why we are only reaching 20-something percent. I would like to... I'm not going to have excuses for Africa, even though I'm an African, but we must remember, this disease has been in existence now for 25 years. Africa got assistance. When? When did Africa get assistance? Less than 5 years ago. It is very important for us to be sincere and say Africa is not doing a good job. None of the African countries have been able to produce ARVs or generic ARVs. It is only after the efforts of certain organizations, and I'll mention here Clinton Foundation, who were able to negotiate the prices down that majority of the African countries were able then to be able to get these ARVs. That's one thing. But other issues are too many to enumerate. For instance, we have attrition of staff due to death and to going to greener pastures. I mentioned the fact that although this disease is old in a sense, but a lot of people who are working in Africa were not trained to treat HIV-positive people. They didn't know anything about ARVs, and I'm one of them. I didn't know anything at all about ARVs. I had to go back and learn again how to treat people with ARVs. And again, when it comes to children, children medication was very unfriendly. It was liquids that were very difficult to draw. You know, Africa has a lot of people who are not educated. There's a lot of poverty. We have civil strife. We have migration, whether internal or external. You have migrant workers who work. If you look at the region where I come from, in Lesotho, in South Africa, majority of the Southern African countries will be working in South Africa in the mines, and they remain there for long periods of time. So all these issues, plus poverty, and also we must understand that all these goals that we are talking about today are actually targeting women. We are supposed to make changes to a sector of the population that is actually not empowered. So there is too much that we need to do to be able to achieve these targets. You need to change the laws, you need to empower the women, you need to retain your staff, you need to understand that it's not only about ARVs, you need to also cater for M&E, as one person asked. Yes, if only you could see what I had written here. Under M&E, there is a big question mark. Because clearly, we are not doing as well as we should. Yes, indeed, there are certain targets that we are able to measure very well, but not everything. For instance, in Lesotho now, I wouldn't be able to give you a figure of people who have been on ARVs. I can only give you a figure of people who have ever been on ARVs, but the ones that remain right now, I wouldn't be able to give you. We have migrant population between Lesotho and South Africa, so that is very tough. Abuja Declaration, I have to tell you that a lot of governments actually embraced Abuja Declaration, and my country was able, the very first year after that, to give 15%. But thereafter, we have gone back to 12%. Why? Because we were not able in the public sector to be able to move all that money and use it all. And if you don't use it, it goes back. And you will be given only what you were able to use. Why? Because we don't have staff to do that, to be able to move this money. The same applies to the funding from the donors. The donors are very reluctant to fund HR. I think with those few words, that will be it.
Okay, thanks. Rico?
Yeah, I think the question was addressed to the question Alessandra was asking was directed to Michelle, and Michelle already answered. But if I may, I just want to add some points. Actually, Alessandra asked about the use of the community report. I would also like to drag attention to the use of the government official report, because sometimes, and I'm speaking from the country level, the government report is separated from the national strategy planning. So actually, they're doing the UNGAS report, but they don't integrate that into program planning. They don't integrate that into national indicators. And I think it's really important for the governments and for the countries to integrate this process, so it's not an isolated event, in order to achieve this universal access or UNGAS targets. Thank you.
And then lastly, Maria Angelo, we have 5 minutes.
Thank you. The question for me was, what are the challenges in Brazil? And I think we have many challenges. I'm like, going to list all of them. We'll be here until tomorrow, but I'll focus on three of them. First, I'd like to say that stigma and discrimination that surround people living with AIDS and vulnerable groups is still a major challenge. I think in every society, in the Western world, in the developing world, it's still a major challenge as it increases vulnerability, and we should always have a political agenda to address that. Second, in Brazil specifically, we have started a mobilization again to increase access to early diagnosis, because we have like 40% of our people who test for HIV, 40% of them, when they do their first CD4 count, they already have a severe immunodeficiency lower than 200 cells. And so this is a major challenge for us. But I think the most important or the most challenging problem we have ahead of us is attending the needs of people living with AIDS, because we have a long-term treatment program. And there are special needs. You know, people who live with AIDS many times need programs to what we call promote social inclusion, because they've been excluded, or to promote that they are not excluded from society. And also, and Michelle was mentioning disability, side effects, you know, of medicines, and also problems that come from the AIDS itself. And this is a big problem for people living with AIDS. And also, I think that we have another thing on people living with AIDS is young people living with AIDS. You know, because we have a whole generation of people who either acquired tuberculosis transmission or acquired in early adolescence. And now they have needs, and they want to have a full life like everybody else. And they have sexual rights, they have reproductive rights. And in Brazil, the government has to work very strongly to provide access to all that. So I guess I just finalized by mentioning what the minister said about 3x5 and what Michelle talked with, that we were at the UNGAS in 2006 until 4 or 5 in the morning discussing whether it would be towards universal access or as close as possible to universal access. And I would say that what we got there was a compromise, because we got as close as possible to towards universal access. What we really wanted was universal access by 2010. And whether that's achievable or not, or like 3x5, you know, these are mobilizing goals. I don't know what's the right word in English, but it's in Portuguese it's very clear, where you move society, you move governments towards a certain goal. It doesn't mean you're going to get there at that time, but you're moving in the direction of. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Now in closing, because we're not going to be able to have more time, for me, what has come out clearly from the panelists is that we can't abandon UNGAS. It's a start for countries to account, but it needs to be improved. Because from Michelle's presentation, it's clear that we wouldn't be able to achieve or to have 3 million people on treatment if we didn't have any process to start with to make sure that governments are accountable. But it needs to be strengthened further at a country level, at a regional level, so that that accountability starts from at a country where when we have to write reports and we write honest reports and say this is what we have done, this is what we have not done. And that political will... because accountability is nothing without making sure that, you know, political leaders are accountable to the public and they're actually achieving the targets. But also for me, the other thing that came up is that we need to strengthen the link between UNGAS commitments and other commitments, especially the Millennium Development Goals. Because I'm coming from a region where women are dying. And one of the Millennium Goals is saying that we need to be, women and children can no longer die of AIDS, but they are still dying. And I'm not saying that to name and shame my region, but that's reality. And with the exception, maybe Lesotho started getting support 2 years ago, but South Africa got support long time ago, because we started supporting South Africa from 1997. I mean, we're showing that there are other things that works, and we are here to support when we got backlash. And as activists and people living with HIV. So nothing against you, Minister, and I'm still saying you are a positive example in Africa, and I'm hoping that all African leaders will take the positive attitude that you have. With that, I would like to close officially this session, and thank you for attending. Thank you to the panelists.